Welcome everyone to this international conference of the Citizens Electoral Council. I mean, this room is packed compared to the last conferences that we've had here. This is only the second international conference we've run. The last one was in 1993, some 22 years. So this is a really remarkable turnout. It's representative of the sort of ferment that we've had coming into this conference from a number of meetings around the country. I'd like to say to everyone, it's thanks to you guys that we've been able to print 250,000 copies of this New Citizen newspaper and spread it around the country, but also for this magazine, which is now circulating amongst the leadership of our country. Now, we've spread them all over Australia, of course, but what you don't know is that in December last year, early December last year, we also mailed those magazines and New Citizens to hard copies of them to all of the House of Lords in the United Kingdom, all of the House of Commons, all the Welsh, Scottish and Irish MPs, and all the bishops in the Anglican and Catholic churches. And we got some very good and very thoughtful and grateful replies. We also emailed a letter with the links to those publications on the internet to 3,000 local councillors in the UK. So, if you've been studying the media lately, the bottom part, UK must join BRICS in the new economic order, is coming to fruition in the sense that the first step of them joining the AIIB, the Australian Infrastructure Investment Bank, has actually come about. The UK is joining that bank. So, this conference, the job of this conference, is to help us do that in Australia as well, for us to join the BRICS. Now, I'd also like to welcome some very distinguished guests. Helga Zeplerush is joining us from the United States, the founder of the Schiller Institute, and also some distinguished guest speakers from the BRICS nations who will be addressing our conference. They are from Russia, Professor Georgi Tolareya, Executive Director of the Russian National Committee for BRICS Research, and Dr. Alexei Muraviv. Who was originally from Russia and is now based at Curtin University in Western Australia. And Philip Tosco Dibani from South Africa, who's joined us for this conference. In this morning's opening panel, the first of two panels entitled The World Land Bridge is Being Built, It's Being Built, we shall also be hearing from Helga, who's online now, founder of the Schiller Institute, and is online, as I said before, live with Google Hangouts. We'll also be hearing through two pre-recorded video contributions to this conference from two members of the House of Commons in the United Kingdom, the Right Honourable Michael Meacher and the Honourable Jeremy Corbyn, as well as Robert Olds, Director of the Burgess Group, also in the UK. The participation of these honoured guests stems from our work during the past year on matters that will be major topics at this conference. The need for instituting Glass-Steagall banking separation in every country, and the need for Europe, the United States and Australia to stop driving towards a world war and join with the BRICS nations for economic development. These magazine pamphlets that you've just seen and are on screen now are being disseminated not only in Australia but, as I said, in the UK. But before we move into the panels proper, we want to bring to our conference a musical musical offering by the CEC Chorus. It's also a tribute to Malcolm Fraser because Malcolm Fraser had hoped to attend our conference to deliver an opening address to it, and also to Helga Zeplerush as the founder of the Schiller Institute. The piece that we want to sing for you is Ode to Joy under Freude, and it's the Schiller Beethoven composition. So I'll ask the chorus to come up, please.
Wir betreuten Feuer trunken im
There'll be more musical tributes and or presentations, I should say, at tonight's music and poetry evening. The chorus will be back to sing a number of other choral pieces, as well as a number of our members singing some very, very nice pieces, classical pieces. That was a tribute to Malcolm Fraser and to the Schiller Institute, to Helga. It's a sad occasion when we lose a great statesman like Malcolm Fraser. We've had quite a bit to do with Mr. Fraser over the last couple of years. He's featured in some of our New Citizens, as you've seen. And we thought we would take this time to pay another tribute to him at our conference. And I'd like to ask Robert Barwick to come forward and pay that tribute.
Today we pause to pay tribute to Malcolm Fraser, a true statesman lost to the world and Australia on March the 20th. When Gabriel Pewett pictured here with Mr. Fraser in 2013, and I briefed him last November on our plans for this conference to discuss how the BRICS nation's commitment to economic development offers a new financial architecture that finally gives the world a chance for lasting peace, he immediately wanted to participate. Malcolm Fraser was passionately committed to peace and economic development. For a generation of Australians, this seems contradictory to his role as the Minister for the Army during the Vietnam War. Mr. Fraser never tried to justify himself, but he also never sought to hide behind the wisdom of hindsight. He explained that Australia's involvement in Vietnam was a product of the Cold War, when he and the rest of the government viewed the Soviet Union as expansionary and a threat to world peace, which had to be opposed. It was only later that he came to understand the situation differently and thus to regard Vietnam as a folly. However, he saw the position he took then, based on his understanding of the situation at the time, as consistent with the position he held up to the day he died, which is that following the end of the Cold War, the expansion of NATO became the greatest threat to world peace and therefore had to be opposed. Unlike Vietnam, Mr. Fraser never changed his mind on this. The events in Ukraine in the last year only confirmed his view, prompting him to speak out. The CEC forged a relationship with Malcolm Fraser based on our shared opposition to the dangerous US ballistic missile defence program, targeting Russia and China for preemptive nuclear attack. Even before we first met, we published his warnings in our October-December 2012 New Citizen newspaper, headlined, "Act Now, Stop Nuclear War. Join Lyndon LaRouche, Malcolm Fraser to promote peace. Expose Hugh White, Michael Danby and the push for war." Mr. Fraser saw with absolute clarity that Australia was complicit in the Anglo-American strategy that is pushing the world towards a thermonuclear war in which Australia was making itself a target. CEC National Secretary Craig Isherwood and I first met Mr. Fraser in January 2013 to discuss our fight against this war strategy. It was a productive discussion, but that meeting was remarkable for the other profound issues on which we found we shared a deep agreement. It's interesting that the CEC enjoyed similar collaborative relationships with other former political leaders of Malcolm Fraser's generation before they passed away. These included the former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, Jim Cairns, and the former Minister for Labor, Clyde Cameron, both in the Whitlam government that Fraser was involved in dismissing. That the CEC found common ground with such political leaders from opposing ends of the political spectrum reflects, I'm sure, many things. But among them is the cultural paradigm shift that has taken place among the generations that have followed. These men shared a cultural optimism about humanity, Australia, and the potential for development that has been almost eradicated completely from political life in Australia, where the political elite now shamelessly dance to a foreign dictated tune of right-wing economic and strategic policies and anti-human pessimistic environmentalism, which portend disaster for our nation. The CEC is unique among Australian political parties in seeking to revive the cultural optimism that these statesmen shared. In that first meeting, Mr. Fraser declared emphatically that Australia's greatest problem was that it was not a sovereign nation. This, of course, has been the CEC's theme for more than 20 years. Indeed, the titles of our first two major policy programs, published in the early 1990s, which named the CEC's primary political objective, were Sovereign Australia and Sovereign Australia Too. Craig was able to recount to Mr. Fraser his conversation with Lyndon LaRouche in prison in 1993, when Lyndon LaRouche observed that Australians did not understand the difference between autonomy and sovereignty, and that Australia's problem was that it had autonomy, but not sovereignty. Mr. Fraser also voiced his views on the financial crisis, declaring, "Repealing Glass-Steagall was the stupidest thing they ever did." He offered to participate in the international campaign to restore Glass-Steagall, on which we briefed him. Later that year, he wrote to a US senator to express his support for the Glass-Steagall legislation then in the US Senate. And of course, last year, he made his own submission to the Australian Financial System Inquiry, calling for a full Glass-Steagall separation of the Australian banking system. When the Australian newspaper reported his submission incorrectly as a call for ring-fencing, Mr. Fraser wrote a letter to the editor clarifying that he wasn't calling for ring-fencing, but the full Glass-Steagall separation in place in the United States from 1933 to 1999. Malcolm Fraser's views on the financial system were consistent with his personal opposition to the radical deregulation agenda that banks, financial markets, and Mont Pelerin Society think tanks started pushing when he was Prime Minister. As a Liberal, Mr. Fraser ardently supported the principle of free enterprise, but, again reflecting his generation's outlook, he believed in the institution of the nation state and the important role of national governments in giving direction to the nation, including economically. It was later revealed that the economic neoliberals among his party used to meet in secret to plot how they would infiltrate their ideas into the party. So fearful were they that if then Prime Minister Fraser got wind of their intention, he would stop them in their tracks. It is notable that the era of radical deregulation,
calling for a full Glass-Steagall separation of the Australian banking system.
It is notable that the era of radical deregulation that followed the Fraser years has been called the, quote, post-1983 consensus on economic reform, i.e. post-Fraser, who never held to the consensus. Finally, in that first meeting, Malcolm Fraser shared his personal vision for Australia to grow its population to 50 million people. He told us he didn't understand the mentality of Australians who hold the view that Australia is overpopulated. In fact, he shared the CEC's optimism that Australia has the resources and skills to develop the continent with water projects and other infrastructure to support a large population. From this first meeting, the CEC entered into a productive collaboration with Malcolm Fraser on these issues of global importance. A good example of that collaboration was the way he sprang into action last year, a year ago, in fact, when I briefed him on the neo-Nazi uprising in Ukraine. He penned a column for the Guardian newspaper in which he placed the blame for the crisis squarely on the aggressive eastward expansion of NATO against the spirit of the undertaking given to Gorbachev following the end of the Soviet Union. A few days later, he gave an interview to Russia Today, elaborating his view, all of which coming from a well-known Western statesman and Cold War warrior, constituted an effective intervention. Mr. Fraser often spoke of his friend, former West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt, with whom he stayed in touch and who shared his views on the Anglo-American aggression towards Russia. A few weeks ago, Helmut Schmidt made a similar intervention into the present crisis as his great Australian mate. An important addition to the chorus of voices speaking out for peace. In conclusion, I would like to read a statement Mr. Fraser wrote in October last year as a greeting to the Schiller Institute conference that Helga Zettler-Rusch hosted in Germany on a similar theme to our conference this weekend. I'm sure if Mr. Fraser had have made it to the conference this weekend to be able to greet Mrs. LaRouche and all of you in person, he would have conveyed a similar message. Malcolm Fraser wrote, "I wish you well in your deliberations. We desperately need a more cooperative and more inclusive world. The West needs to be prepared to recognise and also to accept the consequences of past grievous errors. The move of NATO eastwards was giving notice that the West did not want Russia as a collaborative partner, but rather as a defeated foe still to be marginalised. It is not surprising that NATO's move has led to a cool or even to a sour relationship between the United States, NATO and the former Soviet Union. They virtually made a cooperative relationship impossible. Other Western initiatives have generally ended in failure. The Gulf War to free Kuwait was an overwhelming success, but the possibilities that could have flowed from that war, where 31 nations participated with troops on the ground, were thrown aside by policies of the neoconservatives and their ideas of American exceptionalism and manifest destiny. In that vision, whatever America did was right because America did it. The second war in Iraq was an unmitigated disaster, predictably unleashing sectarian violence which has engulfed and still plagues the whole region. The West has begun a new war against Islamic State in Iraq and Syria without the means to complete that war or to achieve peace. We need a new and more open, inclusive society where others can participate in making the rules that affect everyone. We have a monetary fund and a World Bank dominated by American and Western interests. It is not surprising that there are now moves to sidestep these institutions and create alternatives. There is an option, and that is for the most powerful Western nations to realise that there have been great changes in the world, that the strategic context has altered, that other powers such as the BRICS are emerging, and that the West should collaborate with them as partners to establish a more equal and a more just world." I now ask that everyone pause for a moment's silence in honour of a true statesman who fought to his last for his vision of a just world, in which sovereign nations collaborating on economic development can enjoy peace and prosperity.
Thank you.